You're listening to Faith Ignited. I'm your host, Nancy, and you're exclusively listening to it on Palma Talk Radio. Thank you guys for being here this evening. If you're listening live with me, catch my kisses. I love you all. Thank you so much. I know there's a few of you that tune in. And I love you guys for supporting me in the stuff that I do. And today, being that yesterday was the 25th of April, and it was the start of the Carnation Revolution in Portugal, 25 de Abril, the day that Portugal gained its independence, 1974, I was 1 year old. Wow. That's crazy. What were you guys doing in 1974? What were you guys doing in 1974? Think back. I was one. I don't remember what I was doing. But, man, I want to wish you guys a happy 25 de Abril. It was yesterday, but I wanted to because this is a Portuguese media platform. And I grew up in a household that... hi, Mom and Dad. I know you guys listen. I love you for supporting me. Thank you, guys. I love you. We didn't grow up in a household where we talked politics or a lot of like history and stuff like that. Being that my dad is from Bristol, he was very Americanized. He came to Bristol when he was 3, and he was very Americanized. And so my mom, was very Portuguese, but I never knew, except in school, what we learned about this, the day that was yesterday, the 25th of April. Also, my Titia Fatima's happy heavenly birthday. And my beautiful, beautiful grandmother, Urania. I love you, Vava. Yesterday, or the 24th, was her birthday. We celebrate them. I just feel them with me all the time. I know they're around me. I literally do feel that they're guiding me always. There's so many times recently where I could have fallen or gotten hurt or something happened, and you know, I'm okay, and I believe that I have a lot of guardian angels around me because of the prayers of my ancestors. So as people were posting pictures of carnations and liberations, I also posted about the carnation, but I have to be honest, I don't know the full story, and I'm gonna explain why I'm reading a story that's a little bit different than what I normally do on tonight's episode. Because this is a Portuguese media platform, I wanted to read about the Carnation Revolution because I didn't know how that started or why. And in learning the story, I wanted to read it to you guys because maybe there's someone out there who doesn't remember it or hasn't heard it told by someone who actually was there in the streets of Portugal, which is where my story is going tonight. It takes us right to the streets of Portugal in 1974. what was it like on that day? I have somebody's accounts that I'm going to read his story on the episode tonight. And so this one's going to go a little bit different. I may speak a little bit louder. My narration, my inflection might change. I'm going to change up the music so it's not so relaxing, but that we can get into the story and hear about a man named Philippe Villard-Cortez. Philippe Villard-Cortez. We're going to tell his story. Where he was on the 25th of April in 1974. I just felt that, you know, I didn't really know too much about it, and I feel almost ignorant saying that. But in saying that, I also feel like my household wasn't super, super Portuguese, you know, where the traditions are carried. I mean, my parents did more of the religious stuff, like the mordomos and things like that, but we didn't really celebrate the 25th of April unless we're celebrating my aunt and my grandmother on the same day at like Round Table Pizza, where they would love to have a pizza from Round Table, and they would have their pizza from Round Table, and they would have their appetizers, and so we wish them a happy heavenly birthday. I'm going to change up the music a little bit, and I'm going to read you guys a story. You're listening to Faith Ignited on Palma Talk Radio. So this article was taken from TheGuardian.com. Everyone was in the streets. I just felt happiness. End quote. Portugal recalls the Carnation Revolution as the country thanks 50 years since the end of fascism. People celebrate the co-op's legacy, but say the fight must continue. This story is about a man named Philippe Villard-Cortez. At 4 a.m. on the 25th of April, 1974, Philippe Villard-Cortez got the signal. He barricaded the door of the Mont Real Air Base commander's room and cut the phone line. A few hours earlier, Portugal's Carnation Revolution had begun. Cortez was 21 at the time, a commissioned Air Force officer who wanted the Democrat of Portugal. Democratization of Portugal and the end of its colonial rule. In the weeks before the revolution, he had become involved in meetings with the Armed Forces Movement, MFA. The group that instigated the military co-op that toppled Portugal's authoritarian Estado Novo regime, ending its war to prevent independence in Angola. Guinea, Bissau, and Mozambique. After Sinu Cortez stationed his soldiers at the commander's door, Air Force generals contacted the base, instructing the squad to fly over Lisbon. We refused, saying there was fog, which was totally bogus. An air raid would have destroyed half of Lisbon. I think then the generals pretty much realized that it was a lost situation, remembered Cortez, who is now 71 and a retired airline captain in Sintra. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your service, Sinu Cortez. Thank you for your story. The most operational base was ours. If we wore the MFA, it meant that was it. The whole thing collapsed that day. Portugal on Thursday marked its 50 years since the non-violent Carnation Revolution, which brought down the fascist Estado Novo regime and led to the liberation of Portugal's colonies. While the 50th anniversary will be celebrated across the country, it comes against the backdrop of an election last month that returned 50 members of the far-right Chega party to the Portuguese parliament. The recent success of Portugal's far-right was on Anabela Brito's mind as she prepared to head out to the streets of Lisbon on Thursday, like she did 50 years ago yesterday. I was there when Marcelo went down in Largo do Carmo, she said, referring to the capitulation of Prime Minister Sinu Marcelo Cayetano. At the main military police station in the capital city on the day of the co-op, Brito was a student in 1974 and a member of the left-wing political party. In the days before the revolution, she had heard that a co-op was coming. At 2 a.m., I received a phone call, and they said, "It's now. They're in the streets." On the TV and radio, they were saying, "Stay at home," but people didn't listen. Everyone was in the streets. I just felt pure happiness. She said the fight continues in Portugal for housing and a robust public health service, among other issues. Noting amid Chega's rise that the far right knows how to profit from these problems. Student Alfonso Felipe also recognized the importance of commemorating the day. At 21, Felipe's knowledge of the Estado Novo regime and the revolution comes largely from stories his grandparents who have passed down and down. His grandfather, who was stationed in Mozambique in 1974, has told him of his elation on hearing the news of the co-op, while his grandmother described Lisbon's streets as full of people cheering, almost like a parade with the military leading the charge. This year, I will walk down the Avenida de Liberdade. I will walk down that Avenida de Liberdade. Something that many people and all the left-wing parties do, he said. Amid the rise of Chega, Philippe believed its importance to make a stand and show that we, as a country, will not allow them to pass and make all the sacrifices of our grandparents useless. Their sacrifices won't be made useless. Philippe was concerned that the memory of the regime was fading from younger generations in Portuguese society. Today, I live in a free country, capable of expressing myself. I have the liberty that my grandparents did not have, he said. Sadly, some in Portugal don't know what the last regime did and were. My concern is that the people forget the good that democracy brought. But life remains tough for so many young people in Portugal, with soaring houses, the cost of living, particularly in Lisbon, and comparably low salaries. Sadly, the reality is that it is becoming harder to work and live in Lisbon. Even people like me that love the capital have to seriously think about moving. I still remain hopeful that I am wrong and that the governments will be able to fix these problems, he said. Maria Carneiro, a 35-year-old arts manager in Lisbon, agreed that the election had cast a shadow over the anniversary. We've come all this way symbolically, and this year was meant to be a year of joy and celebration. Then the election had this result of the far right having a big presence in parliament, she said. End quote. Quote, the celebrations are little haunted, she added. I think people feel very disappointed at the political class. There are issues of corruption, transparency, accountability. The average 35-year-old like me, we're not very hopeful for the future. We have very low salaries. Live in a city that's very expensive. We went through our first big economic crisis in 2010. We made it. We got jobs in 2015. But then our salaries, they didn't go up. And prices are rising all the time. We all feel that, right? we feel a bit, trapped. But she stressed the tangible legacy of the revolution. Without the revolution, I would probably be at home and couldn't have studied abroad. I still hear a lot of stories in the first person, people who were in jail or had moved abroad. Thiago Silva, a 39-year-old software developer in Porto, described himself as a product of one of the revolution's most significant triumphs. As the first person in my working class family to complete university education, culminating with a master's degree, I embody the opportunities that were scarily imaginable before the 25th of April in 1974. The generation before mine, the one who's actively participated and were shaped by the revolution, experienced a Portugal that was very different from the one I know. Their youth was marked by mandatory conscription and the turmoil of a fading empire, with many, including my uncles, sent to fight in colonial wars across Africa in their 20s. My uncle did. My uncle Timanuel and my godfather Timanuel. He did. He served in Africa, Mozambique, and Angola. My uncles experienced long-lasting trauma. Both had terrible trouble adapting when they came back, and they never were properly supported by the government, he said. Silva is grateful that, in contrast, his 20s were spent navigating the algorithms instead of battlegrounds. Life in Portugal today is not perfect, he said, and economic difficulties continue to plague the country in particular. But before the revolution, I have a picture of my country that was really behind compared with the rest of Europe. What I see now is a country open to the world. I hope you guys enjoyed, it says, this article. He is saying, for us, if we enjoyed that article, to support him and the Guardian's journalism, supporting their page is theguardian.com. I thought this was going to be a story about the Carnation Revolution. I did not, I don't know why that just talked about that man's experience. I thought there was going to be, so, you know what? Let me see if I can find something, because now I'm curious. Okay, this is what I wanted to hear too, right after that, reading that. The Carnation Revolution got its name from the fact that almost no shots were fired, and from restaurant worker Celeste Cairo offering carnations to the soldiers when the population took to the streets to celebrate the end of the dictatorship. with other demonstrators following suit, and carnations were placed in the muzzles of the guns and on the soldiers' uniforms. And everyone knows how that was started. That's beautiful. It makes me think of a story. Of when my grandmother went to become an American citizen. Let me turn this down, honey. We are not at the movie theaters now. Maybe I should go back to the calm music. I will. We forgot to light my candle too, but that's okay. But I thought the story was going to be more about that the background of everything that happened. And so I read what was on that story, and it was interesting, right? Very interesting facts. Very interesting. And tonight is Portugal night, right? Because I didn't tell the story, did I? The story of when my grandmother went to take her independence, her citizenship, take her independence. Well, she gained independence, but she went to take her citizenship papers. And she studied, you know, really hard, and she was getting all the questions right, and my dad was there, and he would translate to my grandmother, and he would ask the question, and then the guy got to a question where he said to my grandmother, or to my dad, ask her if she was in war in between Portugal and the United States, if there was a war between Portugal and the United States, what would you do? My grandmother, quicker than a whip, honey, she came back with the answer. Well, if they're soldiers, they're gonna be hungry. And I know how to peel potatoes, so I'd start peeling potatoes to feed the soldiers. That is what I've tried to live in my life past couple of years, past 3-4 years maybe, where I'm really living and breathing and doing and not caring what people think anymore. I don't care what people think anymore. I don't care if they think I say too much, if they think I say too little, if they think that I'm not listening or watching. You know, I may not have a reaction, but I'm certainly watching, and I don't care anymore. So I just let it go. I let it go. But I'm very, I pay attention to detail. And it's just in the details with some people, right? It's like you like them as a person, but they have, you know, criticized you or spoken about you behind your back or had a good laugh about you behind your back. You know, I don't care. I'm an open book. What are you going to say that nobody knows about me? I'm an open book. If you ask me a question, I'm going to give you an answer. And that's the honest truth. may take me a second to look at it and read it, but I'm going to answer it. Gonna answer it for sure. And I wanted to say that it's just easier to live that way. I just live. My grandmother was such a prime example of what we're supposed to do, right? We're just supposed to fill the world with love. That's it. It's all we're supposed to do. Fill the world with love. Whatever that looks like for you. Whatever that looks like for you. But, you know, I feel that we are going to take a little break from this music because it's a little distracting. I feel a little like I'm conducting an orchestra, but I think it was very effective for the story. What do you guys think? I think for the story, it was very effective. But I thought the story was going to be more about the Carnation Revolution, but it was that man's, Philippe's story, right? Article that they did on him on theguardian.com. And so I thought that that was interesting knowledge and worth giving it a read here and telling people about telling people, you know, stories that I even though I didn't interview this person or whatever, but narrating their stories, I almost feel like reading it and narrating it is where I have the most fun because I get to do different voices and do different things. And I just have always been a lover of reading. And I like reading and I like being read too. Still at my age, I still do like to be read too. Sometimes I'll send someone a text and be like, can you read it back to me? Baby, you know that I do that. Bestie, you know that I do that. Can you read it back for me? Can you read what this person said? I do that a lot too because I like to hear. I get nervous when I start reading something. So anyway, I wanted to say that I feel like we need to end our night with a beautiful short story. We're going to change up the music. We're going to pick a different, really short story on from my book, Where Angels Walk. And we'll pick up from there a new story. You're listening to Faith Ignited on Palma Talk Radio. You guys know I couldn't go out with a story like that because I say this a lot of the time, so I might change my technique, but I say that I'm gonna read the ending, I'm gonna read this all and prepare for the show, but then I think I want to be surprised with the audience. But my goodness, some of these endings are so abrupt that it's so funny to me. Because it goes from like da 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 and then boomba. It just goes into like story's over. That's it. What happened? What happened? What was the rest? I felt like it. Chiconslada, you know that word? Chiconslada, like, you know, when you crave something and you don't get it, you feel that dissatisfaction, unsatisfied, I guess. I want to remind you guys that before I end with the story about Palma Magazine, we're going to have a May issue that I think you guys are really, really going to enjoy. There's so much hard work that goes into putting all that stuff together, you can imagine. So I want to thank all the hands involved in that. And so check it out on palmamedia.com, at Palma Media, on all of our social media platforms. And let's get into, and of course, follow me, Nancy Burns, on Facebook, Faith Ignited Podcast on Instagram. We're going to end with the story that's called Angels with Nightsticks. Stephen Rogers was a rookie officer in the Nutley, New Jersey Police Department in 1977 when he was assigned to be partners with Phil. Not only was Phil older and wiser, but he was also an outspoken Christian man. For the impulsive and sometimes rebellious Steve, Phil became a role model daily. Before their shift, the two men would pray or read from the Bible, often reciting the 91st Psalm, the one that commits us to God's care and summons angels when we are in danger. Well, Nutley had a growing problem. Recreational areas were being overrun with teenage drinking, taking drugs, and vandalizing property. Police knew where the kids congregated, but wherever they raided and whenever they raided these gatherings, most slipped away and could not be found. Apparently, the teens had a hideout. But where? None of the police officers had been able to find it. One day, Steve and Phil were assigned to plainclothes duty. They were to dress like kids, and it was hoped to discover their hideout and the source of their drugs. That night, they stationed themselves in a secluded wooded area and watched the young people fighting, cursing, destroying property. What I saw sickened me, Steve related. I realized we were not dealing with a few kids having fun, but with many who were hardcore drug addicts, with minds out of control. Many were invoking Charles Manson, the infamous leader who orchestrated multiple murders in California, or performing obscene acts. If this behavior spread, it could threaten the whole city. The main source of the drugs, it appeared, was a young man the officers dubbed Mr. Big because of his apparent emotional hold onto the group. The next day, the officers went to the scene of the gathering, prayed for guidance, and began to check it in inch by inch. They soon came across a well-worn path covered with branches. The path led to the cleverly concealed cave. Inside, the officers found pills, liquor, pornographic material, and marijuana. Sorry, I have to laugh because I'm like, isn't this every teenager? Every teenager, again, didn't read the story, but here we go. Here was where so many young people eluded the police. That night, they decided that they would raid the cave. Before their shift, they requested extra backup, but they were told that they were on their own. How could two officers handle a bunch of aggressive kids all alone? Once again, the men got together. They prayed that Psalm 91. Then they strolled toward the crowd already gathering near a railroad embankment. Mr. Big was there, they noted. We wanted to apprehend him first, because we felt many of the kids would discontinue their illegal activities if he was not around, Steve explained. But as they approached, a girl recognized them immediately, and she yelled, "Cops!" She screamed. The crowd all scattered. Steve and Phil went to the girl, caught her, and called for a backup squad. They knew that some of the others would be hiding in the cave. They found the hidden path, and despite the fact that they were hopelessly outnumbered, walked boldly into the entrance. "Freeze!" Steve shouted. And not a person in the cave moved. Steve ran his eyes across the group. At least 12 of them, and they had caught Mr. Big! Phil walked over to Mr. Big and asked for the package he was holding. Meekly, the young man handed over the bag of pills. Steve gathered other evidence, read everyone their rights, then stood in bewilderment, staring at the cave floor with submissive teens who easily could have overpowered the two officers. Why hadn't they put up a fight, he thought. The van pulled up, and as they led the prisoners out of the cave, Steve turned to Mr. Big and said, "Why didn't you or any of the others try to attack us when we came in?" "You think I'm crazy or something?" Mr. Big asked. "There are at least 20 guys in blue uniforms, and I would have been stupid to think of fighting or running." 20? "No, there was just two of us." "Yeah?" Mr. Big called to the other prisoner. "Belinda, how many cops came into the cave?" Belinda shrugged, "At least 25. It was then that Steve remembered the words he and Phil recited so faithfully. "You will not fear the terror of the night, for he will command his angels, conquering and concerning you." Within 9 months of the time Steve and Phil had been assigned to the special duty, they had made 250 arrests, more than the department's annual total. Former hangouts of the drug addicts and vandals were deserted, and Nutley neighborhoods flourished again. Whenever anyone complimented the officers on their accomplishments, they gave credit to Jesus for protecting them and helping them solve the crime. It was Jesus and that very special squad in blue. Now, if this is your first time at Faith Ignited, you probably really enjoyed the story. If this is your listening to every episode of Faith Ignited, then you may have already heard this story. But if you have not, you just wanted to hear it again, because I didn't mark it down that I had read it, and then I was reading it and thought, oh, I've already read that. And then I thought, well, what do you do, like, you know, with when you're about to tell a joke, right? When you're about to tell a joke and you know you've heard the joke before, do you interrupt that person as they're telling the joke, or do you let them continue the whole joke and tell them later after the punchline, oh, yeah, I've heard that before? What do you guys do? Because I felt like that with this story. I was like halfway into it and thinking, all right, this all sounds very, very familiar. And if this wasn't a show that you've ever heard, I'm so glad we read that story. Kind of coincided with, you know, the first story a little bit. And I especially, you know, want to say thank you for you guys always supporting and listening and commenting and sending me messages when you're live watching and or live listening, I'm sorry. And I've been watching a lot of podcasts lately. That's why I keep saying watching, but here it's listening. So I want to wish you guys a beautiful weekend with your families, with your loved ones. I want to wish you a peaceful and restful next few days. And, you know, really take time for yourself and, you know, take care of you. I have a lot of friends and they put themselves last. I do the same and I tell them not to do that, but I get it. I know why we do it, but I wish that we wouldn't do that, but I think that my Faith Ignited family, my PAMA family, I've made so many new, wonderful connections and relationships, and I'm really grateful that I have a platform, and I'm grateful that I'm here with the family on PAMA Media, at PAMA Media, I should say. And make sure you're following us and download our app. I can't stress that enough, you guys. If you just download the PAMA Media app, you get 4 amazing stations Padu Classic, Palma One, Futrix, and then Palma Talk. So that's so amazing, right? Download our app, and make sure you stop by and say hello if you're ever on Facebook. Send me a message and let me know that you listen to Faith Ignited, and give me your opinion, your feedback. I welcome it with open arms. And with all that, you guys, I think we're coming to our hour. And I enjoyed my time here so much with you guys tonight. I want to send my love to Canada, to my family and my friends in Canada who listen to my show at 9 p.m. in Canada, from 9 to 10. Thank you for hanging in with me. I love you guys. Thank you to the listeners. Thank you to each and every one of you who support me and are part of my heart and my soul and my journey in this world. I love you. God bless you all. Good night. Have a blessed weekend. Bye-bye.